Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
You know, there used to be only two ways to meet for business, over the phone or in person. Now there's a better way. Use GoToMeeting to meet online. With GoToMeeting, everyone sees your computer desktop on their computer screen. So you get the best of both worlds. It's like meeting in person, but without wasting time and money traveling. And your conference calls will be more effective. The best part is that you can actually try it for free. That's right, GoToMeeting is free right now for 30 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/podcasts. That's gotomeeting.com/podcasts for a free trial. And welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. This is Andrew Horowitz. And it is now, well, it's in the summertime. It's warm out just about everywhere. It's certainly warm here in South Florida. And I thought what we'd do is maybe take a little departure. We've been kind of serious for some time now, haven't we? What I thought we would do is, instead of talking about the horrible markets and this terrible oil situation and recession and just all this horrible stuff, I thought I'd get into a totally different topic, something that really is going to be dramatically different. So I thought we'd talk about a global conspiracy. We'll lighten it up a little bit, why don't we? And, well, I promised you for a long time that John Perkins, who is the author of the best-selling million-copy-plus-plus-plus-plus-selling copy of the author, The Economic Hitman, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, he is going to be dialed in a minute. And he also has a new book out, which is fascinating. And I have to ask him a few questions. I want to really understand about, you know, if all these things are really true, why hasn't he been killed? I mean, really, if it's a whole CIA conspiracy and governmental cover-ups and people being killed if they don't, you know, cooperate and heads of state disappearing, you know, what's happening here? I don't know. As I read both books, I was struck by that. I was also struck by the question about, you know, how does he remember all this? If you've read any of the books that he's written, he's incredibly detailed. Just amazingly detailed. And the story is a real one, as he says, and it really ties out and rings true, although I have in front of me a piece of paper here from the U.S. Here, let me just pull this out here real quick. It is the this is about the book is written a couple years back by, I guess, the government, the usainfo.state.gov, and he's talking about Confessions or Fantasies of an Economic Hitman. Purported links to National Security Agency appears dubious. And this is actually an official piece from Washington. Talks about how, yes, he was in this and did that, but, you know, is he really a little bit, you know, stretching this and a little bit off the mark when it comes to much of this? I don't know. I think, you know, again, it seems to me that the things work out way too well in this book and tie out way too well. And I think that it would be very difficult to do so if this is all made up. That's my opinion. But anyway, I want to find out about Africa and find out about what they call jackals and all that. So I thought we'd just have a nice discussion with him today and not get too deep into the markets, into that discussion. So why don't we just get to that in a minute? We'll give him a ring. And other than that, let's see what else I have to talk to you about. The book. If you want, do me a favor. If you haven't got a copy of the audiobook, it's now available on audible.com. And it's also available at Amazon and iTunes, my audiobook, as is John Perkins. And I encourage you, if you can, to check that out because his audiobook is amazing. I read the book and listened to the audiobook, and I did the Kindle version of the new book. So I kind of got it in every kind of way you can read a book. Other than that, everything else is we're going to kind of, again, chill out today a little bit in the summertime. Grab a cold iced tea, maybe, and sit back on your porch and listen in. We're going to give a call right now to John Perkins, Economic Hitman number one. So as promised, we are here with John Perkins, best-selling author of many books, particularly many of you may know him from his book called The Confessions of an Economic Hitman and his latest book, which is out recently, is all about the American Empire. And matter of fact, it's on the bestseller list called The Secret History of the American Empire. And I've been working on getting this interview for a long time, and I'm pretty excited because I'm just amazed about this story. So thanks for joining us, John Perkins.
It's my pleasure to be with you, Andrew. Thanks for having me on your show.
Let me, you know, your first book, for those people that don't really, maybe haven't had the opportunity to read it or listen to it, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, just a riveting tale that it talked about jackals and EMFs and a variety. Give me the lowdown on what's a jackal? What's an EMF? What do we need to know about, you know, what you've been involved with?
Well, I think the short version is to say that during the last quarter century or so, we've managed to create the world's first truly global empire, and one that's been created primarily without the military, primarily through economic hitmen like me, like what I was. And we work in many different ways, but perhaps the most common, is that we'll pick a third world country that has resources our corporations covet, like oil, and then arrange a huge loan to that country from the World Bank or one of its sisters. But the money never actually goes to the country. Instead, it goes to one of our corporations to build infrastructure projects in that country, things like power plants and industrial parks and highways that benefit a few rich people in the country, as well as our own corporations, but don't help the majority of the people who are too poor to buy much electricity or own cars to drive on the highways, don't have the skills to get jobs in industrial parks. However, they're left holding a very large debt, such a large debt that they can't possibly repay it. So at some point, we economic hitmen go back and say, listen, you can't pay your debts. Give us a pound of flesh. Sell your oil real cheap to our oil companies or vote with us on a critical United Nations vote or send troops in support of ours to Iraq or someplace else in the world. And in that way, we've really formed this empire. Now, when we fail, which isn't too often, but I describe in my books how I failed in Ecuador with Jaime Roldós, the president of Ecuador. I wasn't able to bring him around to get him to accept these terrible conditions for his country, nor with Omar Torrijos of Panama. And on those occasions, the jackals step in. These are people who either overthrow governments or assassinate their leaders. In the case of both Jaime Roldós of Ecuador and Omar Torrijos of Panama, because I was unable to corrupt them, they were assassinated by CIA-supported operatives. And in the few occasions when both the economic hitmen and the jackals fail, then and only then do we send in the military. That's what happened in Iraq.
So it's kind of like a behind-the-scenes process, very hush-hush, as you're describing, a kind of a friendly, listen, we really want you to do this, and it builds and escalates into a very significant situation that could end up in a very, you know, in a personal injury of sorts, as you've mentioned about the several aircraft, mysterious aircraft incidents with involving not only senators, I believe, but other political heads of state from various countries, and so this is what went on. Is it still going on?
Oh, absolutely. It probably, in some respects, worse now than ever. Although I think in recent times we've discovered that these tactics aren't working quite as well. For example, in Latin America, 9 countries in the last democratic elections have voted in presidents that are standing up to us. And this is a huge revolution. These are democratically elected presidents. There's been no violence. These are in 9 countries that up until very recently, during all of my lifetime, were run by brutal dictators under Washington's thumb. And just in the recent elections, democratic ones, the candidates have been elected who said no to all of this and are standing up to us. And I guarantee you that, and I've talked to a number of these presidents, I talk about this in Secret History, that every one of these presidents has been approached by someone who has my old job and says to them, well, congratulations, Mr. President, or in the case of Chile and Argentina, Ms. President. And now I just want to remind you that I can make you and your family very rich if you play our game. But if you decide to keep your campaign promises and stand up to our corporations and not allow them to exploit you anymore, then, well, just remember what happened to Allende of Chile, who was overthrown and died at the CIA operation, Arbenz of Guatemala, or Mossadegh of Iran, or Lumumba of the Congo, or Roldós of Ecuador, or Diem of Vietnam, or Torrijos, or Noriega of Panama. And every one of these presidents knows that the CIA took out all these other people, either overthrew them or murdered them. And so, you know, it's a very, very difficult situation. So every one of these presidents now is confronting this. It's going on today very, very strongly. And yet now, because in Latin America you've got nine countries like this, they're taking a lot of comfort in the fact that there's quite an alliance down there. It would be very, very difficult for us to have coups or assassinate all nine of these presidents.
Yeah, and I think that the one that you talk about now is Chavez, obviously standing up to us. But you know, it's interesting. Let me just back up because I think what was different in your latest book and the detail that you go into there about how you know, when you look at some of these things that we hear about here, the reality is that many of them are just political smoke screens to make us really turn against the various and sundry characters down in maybe South America or possibly the Middle East or wherever else it is around the world, so that, you know, we can have American support behind the fact that they're some kind of terrible drug dealer, when in fact, you know, they're just trying to do their thing and not cooperate with us is the problem, and we're spinning this whole thing. Do I got this? Do I have that straight?
Absolutely. You know, yeah, one reason I wrote The Secret History of the American Empire as a follow-up to Confessions of an Economic Hitman was I wanted to bring things up to date, and I wanted to talk about other economic hitmen who've stepped forward since I wrote that book and their experiences and what some of these presidents are saying. I spent a lot of time in Latin America in the last few years. In fact, I just came back from there a couple of months ago. The misinformation that the American people get is extremely disturbing to me. You know, these nine presidents in Latin America who represent, incidentally, more than 80% of the population of South America, there's no question, if you go to their countries, if you talk to people who've observed the elections, that they're democratically elected. There may have been a few irregularities in the process, but they are democratically elected. We may not like them up here. Our corporations may not like them. I have a lot of problems myself personally with Chavez and his rhetoric. But the fact of the matter is they are democratically elected time and time again. And every one of them is, in fact, elected by a larger percentage of their population than our presidents here in the United States are elected by. Mm-hmm. And yet you hear our mainstream press constantly referring to them as, you know, Morales, the dictator of Bolivia, or Chavez, the dictator of Venezuela. They are not dictators. We may not like their policies, some of us may not, but they are democratically elected. And if we profess to be the world's defender of democracy, we need to defend that process. And it's extremely disturbing how strongly influenced the media is in this country, the mainstream media, by the big corporations. And, the big corporations don't like these presidents because they're threatening to tax them more. They're saying things like the profits from Ecuador's petroleum ought to be used to help Ecuador's people, poor people, and the profits from Bolivia's gas ought to be used to help Bolivia's poor people, not just big international foreign corporations.
That makes sense. But, you know, just as a point of reference, you talk about the media, and this is a much smaller item here, but and again, this is from the Whatever It's Worth department in a much more localized situation, but I had 24 points that I was, and again, who am I, but 24 points that I really researched and found in February that was going to be a big concern on the U.S. in terms of, you know, housing and credit and just all sorts of problems that were going to be escalating after a number of meetings and research I did. I sent it to my local newspaper down here in South Florida, and 24 points, and pressed them on it saying, you know what, instead of looking backwards at all this, why don't you look forwards at it? They didn't do anything with any of it. That's first. The second thing is, I gave a very large weekly newspaper several opportunities on a variety of different matters. But because I was going against the market, I was negative on things, they wouldn't print any of it. One story I gave them out of that was a positive spin, and they printed it immediately.
Yeah, well, all you got to do is look at who their advertisers are.
Right.
You know,
right.
And, you know, it's Confessions of an Economic Hitman, Andrew, was on the New York Times bestseller list for over 70 weeks, about a year and a half. And it was never reviewed by the New York Times because it challenges some of these companies that are their main advertisers, and, mm-hmm. and they have a policy of not doing that. And,
right.
You know, it's very sad that we think of ourselves as having a free press, but we don't. But I think the good news out of all of this is that, in fact, this global empire, if there's an emperor, if you want to call, if we want to identify the equivalent of an emperor, it's obviously not our president. An emperor is not elected, doesn't serve a limited term, and doesn't report to anybody. Our presidents don't fall into that category. But we do have a group of people that do, and that's the people who run our biggest corporations. This is not a conspiracy theory. These people do not have to get together and conspire to do these things. They do illegal actions. What they do is legal, but it should be changed. These people are all driven by one single goal, and that is to maximize profits regardless of the environmental and social costs.
Mm-hmm.
And in obtaining that goal, they've created a very, very dangerous world, a world that I have a 9-month-old grandson. I don't really want my grandson to grow up in that world. But the good news is that these corporations are all very vulnerable to us, the consumer. They cannot exist unless we consume their goods and services. And in the past, we've had a tremendous influence over them. We've gotten them to clean up terribly polluted rivers in the United States, get rid of aerosol cans that were polluting, that were destroying the ozone layer, get trans fats out of their foods and antibiotics out of chickens and cows, and open their doors wider to African-Americans and other minorities and to women. And so now we just really need to ratchet this up a notch and say, listen, let's change that goal. And instead of a goal that says maximize profits regardless of social and environmental costs, go ahead and maximize profits, but with only within the context of creating a sustainable, just, and peaceful world
mm-hmm.
for everybody everywhere. Because we must recognize, I must recognize, that my grandson cannot have a sustainable, peaceful, and just world unless every child growing up in Africa, Asia, Latin America, and the Middle East has that same expectation and it's fulfilled. We're a very, very small world today.
Yeah. And to one of the things that, as I'm reading this, I mean, it's a very, and when I say sensational, I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean that, like, wow, you know, it's an amazing story. And one thing, though, actually, there's two things to kind of, it's been gnawing at me. I hope you can answer this for me. First of all, I guess the whole theory that these jackals, these are highly trained and highly skilled and highly behind the scenes cloak and dagger types. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay. And these guys can, you know, make things happen and make it look a different way. And my question is, I don't know exactly how to say this, but why are you still alive?
Oh, well, that, you know, and I do actually address that in Secret History. When I got out of this profession as an economic hitman in the early 80s, I started to write the book, which became Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and I went out and contacted other economic hitmen and jackals. And at that point, I was then contacted and threatened. My life was threatened, and I was offered big bribes, legal bribes, as, you know, being a retainer for a consulting firm but not having to do anything, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I had a very young daughter who is now 26. Gave, just gave me a grandson, and I was scared. I mean, I'd seen what jackals could do. So I took the threats very seriously, and I took the bribes. And I put a lot of the money from the bribes toward nonprofit organizations. You can see them on the website, dreamchange.org, pachamama.org, that were working to help the people that I'd screwed in the past. So it's kind of assuaged my guilt, but I did not write the books. And then 9/11 happened, and I went up to Ground Zero shortly afterwards. And as I stood there looking down into that smoldering pit, I knew I had to write this book. I knew that the American people did not have a good understanding of why there's so much resentment in the world. This is in no way meant to condone the mass murder that happened in 9/11. There's no justification for that. But I realized that I had to tell my story so the American people would know what's going on in the world. And at that point, I decided that I would do it, but I wouldn't tell anybody I was writing this book. Even my wife and daughter didn't know what I was writing.
Mm.
Then when the manuscript was completed and in the hands of my very competent agent in New York, and he'd sent it out to all the major publishing houses, at that point it became my best insurance policy. Because any jackal knows that if they'd killed me then, or if they were to kill me today, that book now has sold millions of copies, but if they were to kill me today, it would sell many, many, many millions more. I'd be a martyr. People around the world would read that story, and they know that. So the book, in fact, is my best insurance policy.
All right. Well, I'm glad you're still here, but it is kind of a spooky, you know, discussion. But the second thing is that as I'm reading, you have an amazing, and it's a remarkable amount of detail. Matter of fact, I was reading one part, and I have the new Kindle. If you know the Amazon Kindle, it's this electronic device, so you kind of can clip pages, and oh, it's really neat. So I clipped all these pages. I kept clipping all these pages, and you had, if my recollection was right, you had a I think it was a New Year's Eve dinner with a head of state. I want to say it was Bolivia, but that's not ringing in my head correct. But
yeah, no, it was. A year and a half ago on New Year's, I was in the presidential palace with Evo Morales.
Okay, so you repeat many of the things that were discussed that evening, and particularly you quote them. You talk about the discussions that you had and the comments that were made and the different things that were very interesting to you at the time. And you have quotes around, which I'm assuming means they were pretty much verbatim. How do you amass this amount of detail and this amount of information? I mean, are you recording things? Are you have a memory that's just unbelievable? How does that work? Because I can't remember what happened yesterday.
Well, in that particular case, there was a film crew filming me in my interviews in Bolivia. And Evo Morales, the president, had a press conference. I was taking notes. We also have it on film. I often, at meetings like this, take notes and have all my life. I have some pretty extensive notes. I also do have a remarkable memory for details like that, for things that are important to me. You know, my wife and daughter will laugh that I can't find my way home sometimes, on the streets of Florida, because they all look alike anyway. You know, there's no hills or mountains. Right. I grew up in New Hampshire where you judge everything by hills and mountains.
Right.
But I can't often remember, you know, what I had to eat last week when I was speaking in Virginia, for example. It's not important to me, but I can remember conversations I had in Virginia with people there that I was lecturing to, a group of executives there. And when I have dinner with them, I may not remember what I ate, but I can remember the conversations very well, because that's very, very important to me. I do have an extremely good memory for things like that. But I also take a lot of notes. And I say in the preface of my books that, you know, I'm not guaranteeing that every word that I quote is exactly the word that person said, but that the meaning certainly is there, and the intent in my memory around the feelings around it. In the case of the meeting with Evo Morales, though, that was very well documented and recorded.
Okay, well, let's just use an example. Now, the one thing that great word, I've never heard of it before, but corporatocracy, which is the emerging of kind of democracy and corporations, which you said is basically behind the scenes of the empire, is really not just Bush, let's say. I mean, it's the corporations that are really dealing with the financial benefits and really kind of steering the giant ship, right?
Yeah, the corporations are really the ones that run all of this. This process of creating this empire has happened under Democratic as well as Republican leaders. Ever since World War II, it's been a growing process. And it's really been spearheaded by the big corporations. No president gets elected in this country. No major politician gets elected in this country, or most countries, without a lot of financial support. Most of the money comes either directly from corporations or through their major stockholders. And there's an incredible amount of pressure on every politician and every president from lobbyists. You know, the huge number of lobbyists in Washington, absolutely huge. It's unfathomable. The pharmaceutical industry alone has two lobbyists for every congressperson in Washington. Mm. That's just one industry. And they're all funded by corporations, and most of them are. Corporations own or control most of our media, either through direct ownership or through advertising, as we talked about. So what I call the corporatocracy, which is really the leaders of our biggest corporations, are the current equivalent of the emperor. But it's important, Andrew, I think, to keep coming back to the thought that these people are very vulnerable. They don't exist, and their corporations cannot thrive unless we buy the goods and services. We have tremendous authority over them. I often think it's important how we vote at the polls and during a presidential campaign. This is very important. But it's also important how we vote every time we go shopping, or decide not to. Because we decide in the marketplace which corporations are going to make it, which ones will have to change in order to make it, and which ones just plain won't make it at all. It's our choice.
Well, I don't know how much time exactly we have, because I have about 16 hours worth of questions for you. So I'm trying to really get to the heart of this. But I have a question about China, Africa, which is really important to you, I know, the African continent. And I do want to ask you this about China. China seems to be a very dangerous and concerning area for you. I have a question about that why, but I also want to ask you this. Back in December, I believe there was this interesting, a very coincidental situation that happened, if you recall, that all of a sudden we were getting this really weird news from China that there was lead in the children's toys, and there were all these problems and danger. And I thought it was really fascinating, the timing of it, number one. Number two, I thought it was really interesting that they were targeting the children's toys in time for Christmas, because I'll tell you something, you and I may not care about ourselves, but we darn well care about our kids, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll do anything we have to for our kids. And I thought that was kind of interesting. Do you think, I don't know if you've looked at this at all, but is that the kind of thing that they twisted so that we wouldn't buy from China, and we created this artificial fear factor? So if you recall back then, the slogans were all over the place, buy American, back to that, and creating a nationalism for our products.
Well, it's a very, very complicated question. Now, I think China has been getting away with murder in many respects. Some of those things in the toys, also the terrible sweatshops, the conditions that a lot of workers work under. And yet, China's made amazing progress. You know, if you look back to the early 70s, the late 60s, who would have believed that Maoist China would be penetrable by us in any way?
Right.
And certainly the farthest things from anybody's mind was that, you know, within 35 years, it would be emerging as a superpower and a partner for the big corporations. And the big corporations these days are very, very deeply involved with China. I think we're at a time in history, Andrew, where this is not so much about nationalism. Is China going to emerge as the next empire, or is it going to be Iran, or perhaps a partnership between Iran and China? Is it going to be, you know, the United States staying here? What's going to happen? I think the real geopolitics of the world today is changed phenomenally. We're at a time that's kind of like when the city-states became nations. And today the nations aren't that important. What's more important are the big corporations. And you could almost visualize the globe as being this place with 180-some-odd countries, of which some used to be powerful. But today there's these huge clouds drifting around the planet. And these are the big corporations. They don't honor any borders particularly or any set of laws. They strike deals with the Brazilians, with the Russians, with the Chinese, with the Indians, with the Iranians, with us, with whoever they please, and move forward. And they are really the controlling power today on the planet. And so what's going on in China is often dictated by them. I have a sense that, I don't know this for certain, but I have a sense that all of that business about the lead in the Chinese toys and the poisoning, so it may very well have been in those toys, but the reason it was chosen to come out at that point in time were certain corporations were trying to exert more authority and control over Chinese manufacturing plants.
And then the other thing is that I think, again, I'm trying to, there's a lot of information, right? I mean, to take in, but I think the basis and the thesis that underlies the entire the writings that you have in your latest book, although it was in Hitman also, but in The Secret History of the American Empire, was it's all about, or it has been at least, all about the oil, which ties out right to after, you know, post World War II, and in the future it may be about water, but right now, still focusing on right now, it's all about the oil.
Yeah, no question. Oil is our, you know, premier resource. It's what the dollar's value is based on, in essence. In 1971, we went off the gold standard. By 1973, we'd gone on the oil standard because the dollar is the only currency that currently you can use to buy oil on the international market, although there's certainly attempts to change that. Oil is the number one resource at this point in time. It's extremely, extremely instrumental. It's what makes Iran such a big player at this point, why we're constantly, our politicians are constantly talking about Iran, maybe invading it, because it, not only does Iran have a lot of oil within the country itself, but it really is behind the success of the loss of the Iraqi war by the U.S. can really be attributed to the Shiite movements coming out of Iran. They you know, literally defeated Israel in Lebanon. You know, that's always portrayed as being a Lebanese movement, Hezbollah, etc., but very, very much Iranian-backed. Iran works through proxies, not directly through its own military. And if they end up controlling that whole corridor of oil that goes from the Caspian Sea down to the Persian Gulf, which includes the Emirates and includes the Saudi Arabia and Kuwait, which could conceivably happen, especially if they strike a deal with China and work that way. we then have to come to terms with Iran. And so this whole thing around oil is an extremely crucial one right now. No question about it.
Yeah, I don't understand how we've let it go so far. If we have the dollar is pegged to oil, if you will, and that's the currency, I don't know, honestly, how we've let it go so far unless what's happening is this is just an absolute one of two things. It's an attack by the other side to kind of teach us a little lesson, or if we've just not calculated properly, because essentially while there's extraordinary profits to be made here, it seems to me that there's going to be an inflection point that we're going to break our own back.
Well, it's a huge strategic error, I believe, that we totally sided with the Sunnis and Saudi Arabia, that whole group. And in fact, we've been convinced that Ahmadinejad of Iran is crazy. He speaks that way. He probably is slightly crazy, but he's not really the one running Iran. We've been totally outfoxed by the Iranians, who have a whole different sort of political setup system than the one we believe they have. They've conducted an extremely successful campaign in places like Lebanon and Iraq and throughout the Middle East. And we really, really misjudged that. Our military, our intelligence are constantly sided with the Sunnis. And in fact, the Shiites are the ones that are dominating. When we took out Saddam Hussein and his Sunni army, we really, really opened the door for the Iranians. They've been trying to take out Saddam for a long time. It had one of the longest wars in history between Iran and Iraq, terribly deadly war. It came to a stalemate. We went in and basically annihilated Saddam's army, and that was the biggest gift we could give to the Shiites. We totally misjudged that situation. It's pretty shocking, but we were really living in the past, living in this time when we said the mullahs run Iran. It's much more complex than that, and that they're crazies and they're never going to make it. The fact of the matter is they have all these proxies throughout the Middle East who have been extremely successful at putting us down.
Hmm. All right, so I could ask you all about Noriega when it looked like it was, I think from your words, that we basically wanted to, we were protecting Bush from pictures getting out, and that was all about that rather than a madman running the place. I could ask you about the benefactors of wealth stripping of Africa and Asia, and I could ask you about all these, but tell me this, because, you know, again, there's only a certain amount of time. What do you propose? What do we do?
Well, it's the big corporations that have the power. There's no question. And regardless of whether we're talking about China or Iran or Brazil or the United States, they all have to work with the big corporations. And ultimately, Iran will have to strike deals with the big oil companies because they have the means of digging out the oil and distributing it around the world. The oil companies hold the key, not the oil companies, the big companies, including the oil companies, hold the key to the world's geopolitics. And you and I and all of your listeners hold the key to the big corporations. We have the power to decide which ones are going to make it and which ones are not going to make it, and we need to exercise that power. We, you know, by the way we shop and don't shop. So, you know, if we don't ever buy any clothes that are made in sweatshops, there will be no more sweatshops. So the current sweatshops will become legitimate factories where people are paid a decent wage and get health benefits and retirement policies. But we must, when we don't buy something made in a sweatshop, write a letter to Nike telling them why you're not buying their product and send an email to the company that you do buy from telling them why you do. If we never buy another inefficient automobile, gas guzzler, there will be no more produced. And especially if we let the companies know why we're not buying those cars, but we are buying other ones. That's the way that we can really turn this thing around. I know a lot of executives in big corporations, and I don't know one of them that's crazy. And I don't know one of them that wants to see Florida sink beneath the ocean. Mm-hmm. Most of them are people with children and grandchildren. They want a stable, peaceful world. But they've been brought up and trained with this idea of maximizing profits regardless of social and environmental costs. And we, the people, have got along with it. We said we want the cheapest possible computers regardless of how many people die in the Congo mining the coltan that has to go into these computers. And we also want high rates of return on our stock. We need to turn this around and say, you know, we really want something else in here. We want to create a sustainable, just, and peaceful world for ourselves and our children and our grandchildren. That needs to be the goal. We can have profits. We can have good products. But let's also have that goal of creating a socially and an environmentally responsible world.
And I think I agree with you. I mean, I think I'm pretty well, generally well read and kind of know what's going on. And I have a confession. I didn't know until only a couple of years ago really what was going on in Darfur. That's been a a quiet. I mean, I don't know everybody thinks it's quiet, but I don't think it's been as announced as well as some of the other places that we've seen the atrocities and things go on. And that's a disaster zone.
We're not well educated in this country. It's very, very difficult to get good information. Darfur has been a pretty well-kept secret. What's going on with Coltan, as I mentioned, in the Congo is even a better secret. An estimated 4 million people have died in the last decade there so that we can have cheaper and cheaper cell phones and computers and iPods, etc. But we're kept in the dark about that, Andrew, and I think that's a terrible shame. It's one of the reasons I wrote the books that I wrote. And there's a lot of people now also writing amazing books on these subjects. Bob Baer, ex-CIA undercover guy, one of the top people, is writing amazing books. There's a lot of people. There's a lot of movies coming out, like Syriana and Blood Diamond and The Constant Gardener. So things are coming out now. We need to, really inform ourselves better. Thank God for programs like yours.
Yeah,
that are doing just that.
I just thought of something. How would I look as an EMF? Maybe when the movie comes out, you can consider me for your part.
Okay. Unfortunately, I don't make the decision on that. It's the production company.
Well, especially the early days.
The movie should be out in about a year and a half, incidentally.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, I know that. Oh, I was just kidding around. That's cool. Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's in the making now. They haven't started shooting yet, but they're scouting out the locations, and the script's been pretty much written.
And by the way, you mentioned I think we mentioned the movie Blood Diamond. Blood Diamond's one of the most riveting movies that I have seen in a very long time. Which is all about this whole same discussion.
Right.
Well, I thank you so much. And again, we have just a limited amount of time, and I don't want to abuse that. And hopefully we'll get you back one day. And thank you for, writing this, and again, for making a, amazing eye-opener for us. And also for, obviously, if we do have all these other writers maybe coming out with it, that you set the stage for that, because the fear in doing so for yourself and family and for others that you know and love is extraordinarily high, basing it on this and, on what's gone on. And obviously you opened the door for maybe others to also come out and tell their story, which obviously, you got to go back and forth on where the safety of the U.S. and the secrets and all that. But, the stories that should be told.
Well, yeah, that's why I keep writing, Andrew. And thank you for what you do, because it's terribly important that the American public hear this, and that there are programs like yours that bring all of this out, so I deeply appreciate it.
All right, great. Hey, John Perkins, get his book. And when I say get his book, get his books. I'll have links to all his books on the site in the show notes. And if you haven't done so, definitely, there's no question, read this, the new one, The Secret History of the American Empire, New York Times bestseller. And also, I want you to go make sure to hit up either Audible or Amazon or wherever you choose to listen, to Kindle, whatever you want to do, and get Confessions of an Economic Hitman, lock the doors, and spend the weekend reading it. You'll be very, very pleased you did. Thanks so much for joining me.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Well, there you go. That was John Perkins, and wow. I mean, wow. I would love to hear what you have to say about this. It is a very concerning and disturbing and really just a litany of adjectives to talk about the just deep level of just total amazement at the potential problems that we have here and the reality that our government does think. I don't know. I mean, I'm just not really from the conspiracy theory side of the equation, but some of these things just are really spooky, to say the least. And I'll tell you something else. I think that when it comes to much of this, I think we have to, unfortunately, we're going to probably find out way too late anything that really does go on. And because if there is something like this going on and has been going on, where we are really just after the oil and after just brutally bankrupting these countries by taking their natural resources and their general materials and really with no regard for their citizens and just an outright thievery and scraping of everything on their land, then, someday it's probably going to come back to haunt us. And who knows if that was happening recently with the whole situation with 9/11 and all of the hatred for us and Americans throughout the world. But I'll tell you, I recommend very highly you get his book. And I would start with Confessions of an Economic Hitman, because I think that lays down the groundwork of the EHMs, the Economic Hitman. And he said there's going to be a movie coming out. So there you go. Maybe just check out the movie. Either way, we'll talk to you real soon and enjoy your summer. I'd love to hear your email. Send it to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And other than that, we'll talk to you real soon. Thanks a lot for listening. The Disciplined Investor is all done for today. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.